Good evening and welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. This evening we bid one last farewell to rock musician Joe Cocker, who passed away on Monday. We're broadcasting from our beautiful state-of-the-art Cocker studio, which could not have been built without the support of Joe and his wife Pam. Joe and Pam's support for KVNF over the years has been invaluable in so many ways. In this special hour-long tribute to Joe Cocker, we will hear excerpts from an interview Joe did at KVNF, and Joe's good friends in Snooker Club will also share stories about their friendship and history with this legendary musician and beloved community member. But we begin today with journalist Howard Smith's interview with Joe Cocker from November of 1969. Writing on his new success from Woodstock, Cocker and his band returned to the U.S. for a quick tour. This interview gives some insight into Cocker's first impressions of the United States and his lifelong need for peace and quiet.
After a long summer playing music festivals around the States, Joe Cocker tops it off with his breakthrough performance at Woodstock. It's now November 21st, 1969, and Cocker has just returned to the U.S. for a brief tour. He sat down with Howard Smith in New York City for this conversation.
How about what little picture did you have of this country before you came here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's what I picked up. It's what you got off the movies that I used to watch as a kid and all that. And when you come here and see it...
Like what? What did you imagine? Cowboys?
No, I mean, I always knew America down to hamburgers and big cars, you know. You come over very flash, you know. But because of the rock and rollers about, that was a great thing. Great buzz about America, all the rock and roll people. And... like the first time we came here, New York used to depress me beyond belief, you know. Just used to want to sit in my hotel room, you know, and we just didn't like it at all. But now I'm getting to feel place out, you know, I enjoy it wherever we go in America.
What is it that depressed you?
Just the vibrations came on so strong, like of New York, to me. Just to feel it going, you know what I mean? I mean, it's really moving about. Sort of sirens going off and things like this, eternally all through the night, and all this bells clanging and people lying in gutters and things like that, you know. I just hadn't seen it before. Mm. You know, we took a walk down 42nd Street one night and saw some really desperate cases, you know. How the Americans will let the fellow people get in some bad states of health without, you know, like in England, nobody let anybody die. You know, you wouldn't ask him to show his money before you take him in hospital or anything like that.
Yeah, but you have more of a socialized medicine type situation.
Yeah, you know, everybody pays a little contribution each week on a government scale, you know, to pay for national health, they call it, and things like that. Because we were in L.A. one day, going at cinema, and there's this a guy in the street, and he was in really bad condition, and he was sort of going, and he was looking at everybody and going, you know, like this. And everybody was running away from him, and he was really in bad shape. Man. And Bruce, our drummer, sort of sat him down on pavement, told him to take it easy, and we got the usherette to ring for an ambulance. And this ambulance came, and these ambulance guys rushed to him, and I couldn't believe them, their sort of attitude to him. You know, sort of saying, well, have you got any money, man? And he's going, you know, slavering his guts up on the pavement. I just wouldn't see things like that in England.
Really?
I haven't seen things like that, no.
The Smith Tapes are unearthed interviews from 1969 to 1972 with rock stars and cultural icons like you've never heard them before. This conversation and many more can be found on iTunes and at thesmithtapes.com.
You're listening to Talkin' Music on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Joe Cocker was friends with KVNF DJ and board member Bob Panetta since the early 70s. Here are some excerpts from an interview that Bob, also known as Geets, did with Joe just after his 2007 CD release, Hymn for My Soul. The interview takes place just after KVNF moved into their new building. Joe and his wife Pam contributed greatly to the construction of the new state-of-the-art studios. The air studio from which we broadcast from is called the Cocker Studio.
You know, when I went to, a while back, I was asked to sing at Billy Preston's funeral, you know. And so that, you know, I met a lot of black artists who I hadn't seen in years, you know. And Mary Clayton, she sang on Gimme Shelter, the Rolling Stones. I think that's probably her biggest claim to fame. But she was a Raylette with Ray Charles for many years.
I didn't know that.
And she came up and said hello. And then I was talking to this guy about, you know, who I'd known, a guy called Alan Abrahams, who now produces gospel records. And I said, could you put me a choir together? So we had a girl, Doris Waters, who's been, I've sung, you know, she's been on many of my records, and Oren Waters, and Mary. And so, you know, we were, I mean, it might seem a bit like most of the people on the record were, you know, we were all getting on a bit. But I think the spirit of it, you wouldn't notice that, you know, people were all in their late 50s or 60s, you know.
Well, I don't think that's a bad thing to notice, because it takes a while to really develop the chops that a man can develop. And
yeah.
And I think, if anything, Joe, your music just gets better and better.
So. Well, I mean, being in the studio with those guys is remarkable, you know, to just, I mean, like Bob Babbitt, the bass player, was, you know, you think that guy's probably never put the bass down since the 60s, you know?
Yeah.
Just kept going on, you know?
Playing every day, probably.
Right. I mean, just, and I'm not having a go at young musicians, but they just don't, you know, they don't get into that. I mean, there aren't many session, you know, because I'd gladly try and make an album with younger cats if you know, but a lot of times they just can't deal with that instant thing, you know?
Sure, sure. Mm. It's like a lot like Cornell Dupree or Eric Gale. I mean,
yeah.
If Eric was still alive, he'd probably be
just
still a splendid player. But those guys are the kind of guys that could go into a studio session and pick up a chart from anybody and play it.
Really?
And play it well.
And just bring, and they bring a lot of soul into the track, you know, that's what matters.
I wanted to hear that Beware of Darkness tune.
Ah, yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Where did that come from? Whose tune was that?
You know, this is a song that, I mean, it's a George Harrison song.
That's right.
Yeah. And I believe Leon Russell did a version of it, too, a few years ago. But it was, again, it's one of those demos that kind of, you know, I still call them demos, that when people send me songs. And I kept thinking, why do they keep sending me this tune? And it was a song I wanted to sing, and people, you know, like from the record company, would go, ah, it's too depressing, you know. And then when I talked with Ethan, who is a very optimistic guy, you know, he said, no, if you listen to the words of this song, it's actually, it's the other way around. It's supposed to, you know, even though it says beware of darkness, it's trying to, you know, get you towards seeing the light.
Uplifting tune, yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. And this was on a George Harrison album. It wasn't on a Beatles album.
I think it was All Things Must Pass. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's listen.
Cool.
What job now to care beware for and swinger? Dropping all around you, the pain that often mingles in your fingertips. Beware of darkness. Watch out now, to care, beware the thoughts that linger. Winding up inside your head,
It can hit you. It can hurt you. Make you soft, and what is more, that is not what you are here for. What job now to keep you wet? A soft shoe shuffle. Dancing down the sidewalk as each unconscious sufferer wanders endlessly. Oh Lord, beware of mine. To care, beware, greedy little. They take you where you should not go. While weeping at the cedar, they just want to grow.
Your voice sounds great, man, and I know it's
Bless you, Keith.
I know it's because you take those long walks every morning.
Mountain air, man, it's true.
And
I always think it's funny because the producers caught on that when I'm up here and my lungs are full, you know, like you go, your corpuscles, I mean, I don't know which you make more red or white ones. So I preserve a lot of air when I first go down to LA to sing. Oh, I have all like these long notes, which, you know, you run out of as you get a bit older.
Sure.
So they always jump on me to do the vocals as soon as I get in town.
That's great. But you're going to be stronger and stronger, so it won't be necessary.
Hey.
As you keep hiking those Rocky Mountains. Later on, I'm going to get into this little thing about the rumor that's going around that you and Pam are leaving.
We always hear this, Keith. I don't know. You know, I think it's because we don't have any animals in the garden anymore.
Now Chunk is still there.
Hey.
Come on.
But, no, I don't know why people, you know, every now and then I get stopped by people going, so you're on your way out? And I'm, no. I mean, it took me a while to get acclimatized. We've been here, what, 15 years?
Yeah.
And so give us a break, you know. Like.
You're home.
Thank you.
Absolutely, man. You guys are part of the community. We wouldn't know what to do without you guys. And we're here with Joe Cocker. Pam Cocker's in the house as well. And you're listening to KVNF. People Power Mountain Radio coming from Paonia 90.9. And
my friend just called and said we're leaving some spaces, but I said, hey, it's local radio, you know.
We're leaving some spaces? Well, tell him to fill those spaces in. If it's the friend I think it is.
It is, yes.
He's well experienced at filling in those spaces, man. We did have a call, though, from a fellow that said that your version of Bird on a Wire was to him even better than Leonard Cohen's, and that every time he hears it, he's brought to tears.
Yeah, I have. So. It's strange. I've not sung that song in many years. You know, it used to be with the Grease Band. It was part of the set, and actually, I mean, even after Mad Dogs and Englishmen, we did it with the big choir. Some songs you just let go. But Leonard Cohen, what a great writer, you know.
What do you say we slip it in and give it a listen?
Sure, sure enough.
That's Bird on the Bird on the Wire.
Like a bird on a while, like a drunk on a midnight wire. I rise in the mountains to and I'm tired. Oh, I'm tired. I'm not. John Russell, Chris Stainton, the choir, the whole band, will get around to it in time.
And Joe Cocker, yeah. Well, that was a good little request. I'm really happy that fella called up. That was, mm-hmm. It was nice to hear. Hadn't heard that tune in a while, and there's no doubt about it. So, Joe, we had a caller that asked what it was that makes you such a survivor and a thriver, and I'm looking at part of it right now. So what is it, my man?
I just didn't stop going, you know. I mean, actually, I really enjoyed last year when all I did was go fishing and grow tomatoes. And I just did a bit of work, you know. But it was quite nice, I must admit, to just kick back a little bit. It's just a way I've always gone out on the road and performed. We were out on the road with, I remember meeting Joss Stone's band, and they couldn't believe that we did like 5 shows in a week. Or, you know, I've never liked to hang around when on tours, you know. Yeah. But a lot of the bands now, the Coldplay and stuff, they'll do 1 show and take 3 off.
Yeah.
You know.
That's not the way the old blues men did it.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you hang around in towns too long, you get in trouble, don't you? You know. So, but a thriver and a survivor—I never thought of it quite that way. But
you might have.
It's still a buzz, you know, to get out and entertain people, especially in, you know, I loved. I mean, when we were in Romania, you know, looking out my hotel window at people going by, and a woman and a sheep stuck out the top of a, you know, just through a coat.
Wrapped in a blanket.
Mm. And apparently if you just give the sheep a little pat, it would bring you good luck, you know.
Oh, nice.
So, mm-hmm.
Sure is a pleasure to have you here with us in our new studio and have Pam here. And I just want to take a quick minute to thank both of you guys for what the Cocker Kids Foundation does, because it's just a wonderful addition to our community, and it's just helped so many kids realize their dreams.
Well, you're involved very heavily, Keith, so you know too, man. I appreciate everybody else's involvement.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, man, for coming in and spending this time.
It's been great, Keith.
With us tonight. Give you guys a chance to see the new studio.
Really, Bob, we're more than impressed, man. I mean, it's incredible, all the space and, you know.
That's what happens when good people work together on good projects, man.
True.
It's very sweet. But thank you, my friend. It's always very special to share this time with you.
It's been a while, Geese, but again, man, you know, I love hanging out with you. You know that.
Hey, very cool, man. I'd like to close with I guess what's going to be the single off the CD, Hymn for My Soul.
Correct. Written by Andy Fairweather Lowe, you know, with, do you remember a band called Amen Corner?
Yes.
Years ago, like Welsh guys.
English, was it? Oh, they were Welsh. Mm. Okay.
And Andy, I mean, he was working with Eric Clapton, like as a rhythm player for a few years. I think they must have fallen out, but it was just, it's an odd little song. It goes somewhere between a gospel song and a pub tune, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
But everyone seems to like it, so we made it the single.
Well, we're going to give it a listen, and thank you again, my friend.
Love you, Geets.
I saw myself today. I smiled and looked away. Saddened by my visible life. Sorrow cut me like a knife. Nobody knows you without any doubt. Nobody wants to know you when you're down and out. So sing a hymn for my soul. Stand by me as I grow home. I'm just trying to climb a nine hills in seven short days. Sing a hymn for my soul. Today, didn't like what I had to say. So right, I could only be wrong. Trouble is when I'm alone. No doubt, no self-control, not a reason to cry. I feel like empty rain through an empty sky. So sing a hymn for my soul. Short days, so sing a hymn for my soul. I saw myself today. I look good, yes, I had to say. Polished till it won't shine no more. Flying dragons surround my door. If and when I go crazy, to my own self I'll be true. Ain't nobody's business what I do. So sing a hymn for my soul. Stand by me as I grow old. I'm just trying to climb a nine hills. Seven short days. Sing a hymn for my soul. Tell me about it.
Sing a hymn for my soul.
Sing a hymn for my soul.
Stand by me as I go.
Won't you stand by me? Little girl, you know it.
Sing a hymn for my soul.
One more. Sing a hymn for my soul.
During his 22 years in Crawford, Cocker enjoyed long rambling outings each morning in all weather in the foothills of the West Elk Mountains with his dogs. And then there was the snooker with the guys. Once a week, the gang that included Michael McCarthy, Ed Bliss, and Bob Panetta got together to play the English billiard game. Here the snooker club, joined by Cocker's longtime friend and tour manager, Mark Aglietti, talked to KVNF's Laura Palmisano about their friend Joe Cocker.
My name is Michael McCarthy, and I met Joe in Jamaica so many years ago that I don't even want to count him. And he was just such a beautiful person, and then he decided with Pam to move here into the valley, the North Fork Valley. And I was asked to do the legal work to get them in here and to check the water and check the contracts, which I did, and became kind of the family lawyer until I retired a few years ago. I'm also part of the snooker club, the North Fork Snooker Club, in which we've six guys have had just such an absolutely incredible time every Wednesday night for the last maybe 15, 16 years, I'm not sure. And Joe's been a big part of that, and I've loved every minute of it.
My name's Mark Alietti. I've known Joe for almost 45 years. I worked with him through the 70s and actually brought him to this area for the first time to go down the river with Bob and some friends in 81. And he fell in love with the place then. And he's been a part of my life, and it's interwoven back and forth for all that time.
Hi, I'm Bob Panetta. Marco introduced me to Joe in the early 70s. First time I saw Joe was in 1967 at a roller rink with about 300 people, touring with the Grease Band, I believe.
Cinnamon Cinder.
Yeah, member of the Snooker Club, and many fine memories with Joe, not only here but in Jamaica as well.
Hi, my name is Ed Bliss, and I've known Joe for about 22 or 23 years. Met him at a Valentine's Day dinner in Crawford, the town Valentine's Day dinner, when Pam and Joe sat down across from myself and my wife, Pam. Also, I'm of the Snooker Club, enjoyed hundreds of games, it seems like, over the last, I believe it's as long as 18 years that we have done this, and fishing with him on the river, and just really miss the guy. Wonderful man.
Michael, what are some of your fondest memories with Joe?
One of my fond memories is when I went down the river with him, and I think Bob Panetta was there with us, and we got there and there weren't enough tents, and so I got to sleep in a sleeping bag outside and he slept in a tent next to me. And so the next morning we got up, he crawled out of his sleeping bag and I was just freezing outside. He said, Michael, he said, I'm glad you're alive, man. He said, you were just making all these noises last night. I said, well, man, thanks for getting out of your damn tent and checking on me, buddy, because I could have been dead. There are so many. That's a good one, though.
How about yourself, Mark? What is one of your fondest memories of Joe?
My fondest memory of Joe? Well, there's far too many. We traveled extensively in the 70s together. And you know, we were on tour together, so we went into the mountains of California on a fishing trip, and we took donkeys and rode horses and packed in. And on the way out, he wouldn't get out of the off of the horse because he was afraid that he would never get back on it. So. But I mean, that's not even a good one, but it's way too many at the moment for me to think of.
And how about yourself, Bob?
Oh man, I think one of the best ones was when Joe and Pam had decided to move here, and at first they were thinking about Telluride, and we were looking at property in Telluride, and it was another horse story because these cowboys wanted us to tour their ranch on a horse. And I'd had experience with Joe on horses before, and I told him, hey, whatever you guys do, do not put him on any kind of horse that's got any spirit at all. You get the oldest, nastiest nag and put him on that because he is not comfortable. Don't worry. We know what we're doing. So, of course, the horse blows up. Joe's on the horse. I'm running up and grabbing the reins, holding the reins, getting Joe off the horse. And we're just furious at this point. So the cowboys want to make it up to us, and they decide we should all go to the bar and have a beer. And Joe got even, because when Joe and I walked out, and I didn't ever try to keep up with Joe, when Joe and I walked out, they were throwing up on each other. There were guys under the table. And Joe just grinned and said, yeah, sure, big cowboys.
And how about yourself, Ed?
I think my favorite story of him actually is kind of a couple in a way, and it's really the first hard memory I have of him. When we met at that night in Crawford in the Valentine's Day dinner, the first time I'd ever seen Joe was in Philadelphia in 1970. It was called the Quaker City Folk and Rock Festival, and the night I got to see Joe there was with B.B. King, Janis Joplin, Joe, the Youngbloods, and Canned Heat. And I related that story to him that night while we were sitting there eating dinner, and he looked at me and he goes, you know, that's one of my worst nights ever. He said, I regretted that night so much, and I thought, great, what a thing to bring up. But he said, just before I went on, I was the next to the last act, and Janis was the last act, her road manager came over and said, would you like to sing with Janis tonight? And he said, no, there'll be another time. And unfortunately, there wasn't another time. But that's a kind of a strong multi-level memory there.
So, Michael, you are in the Snooker Club, as are the rest of these gentlemen. You were telling a story during the live tribute earlier about Joe coming in one night and saying he's given up drinking. Can you tell me about that story?
Well, it was one of the most amazing turnarounds I'd ever seen. I mean, both Bob and I had helped him around lots of times late at night and helped him find his pool cue and his snooker cue, and never, as everybody knows, he had a period for some really strong drinking, and so it was just a normal thing. It was at his house too, and he came in and his big jug of rum was there and said, Joe, you ready for a drink? And he just simply said, I don't drink anymore. And he had just stopped, and he swore that it wasn't because of any health issues, it wasn't because of any problems he was having, it was just time for him to quit. He'd paid his dues to alcohol.
Mark, you've known Joe for 40 plus years. Can you tell me what it was like touring with him?
Well, when he was drinking, he was a handful, and he was a consummate performer, though. He never missed a show, never once missed a show, and always did an utmost job. I mean, we did some shows under some adverse circumstances, but he never missed a show, and he was dead keen on getting the show correct, you know. And I would think that anybody who was in the position that he was in would have times where he just couldn't get up for it. But when that first note hit, he was there, and he did an outstanding job whenever he performed.
Can you tell me about one of the best performances you recall?
Performance that he gave that was outstanding to me. He had for the longest time he wouldn't do. He'd cut Little Help out of the performance, and everybody, yearned to hear. Everybody that worked for him for that many years, a lot of people actually hadn't heard it for the longest time, and he in Melbourne, Australia, under some other adverse circumstances, he performed that song, and I saw grown big men, tears streaming out of their eyes, because he blew that one out of the park, and it really meant something to a lot of people. So that was probably the biggest performance I had ever seen that he made.
Ed, you said you spent a lot of time with Joe fishing and doing outdoors type of stuff. Western Colorado is a great place for recreation. Can you tell me about some of his loves of the outdoors?
One of his loves involved his dogs. And right up till the very end, up until maybe 3 weeks ago, he would go on really long walks with his dogs in the their edge of the West Elk Wilderness and up the Smith Fork. And he just loved it, and he wanted to learn everything he could. If he didn't totally understand, he'd come out and ask some of us what he'd seen, he was just very inquisitive about nature and just loved being out there. And his desire to be on the Black Canyon fishing, you know, down there in that gold medal area, was almost insatiable. I mean, he'd go several times a year, and fortunately I was invited, all of us in this room have gone fishing with him on that river, and it was just a great time to spend time with that guy who was welcomed by the Queen, and it was just a guy fishing with you down the river at the same time. It was a wonderful experience.
Can each one of you tell me what Joe was like as a friend, since you all knew him well?
Joe was one of the most loyal friends that I have ever had in my life. And he was so intelligent, and talking with him about subjects other than music or other than fishing, talking to him about politics nationally and internationally, his insights were just always very, very deep and very incredible. The last time I talked with him, he said, well, it looks like we're finally getting some people standing up to so many black people getting shot. He said, it's about time. And he was true. He was right there. You know, so many friends that you have or people you know, you're with them, but they're not with you. He was always there with you. He was always looking in your eyes. He was always talking. He laughed a lot. And the man loved a good joke.
So, Mark, what was Joe like as a friend?
Joe made me laugh more than anyone. More than anyone. He was unique in that ability. He also made you feel like you were the only person in the room if you were in a crowded room. And, you know, he had that unique ability to make you feel, like you were one-on-one at that moment with thousands of people around. And he was a real genuine person. Things were precious to him. Lots of things were really precious. Music, especially music, was precious. That was something that he didn't have when he was a child, the freedom of just being able to pick music up, and even a radio station. You didn't have radio stations in Sheffield that played what the genre of music that you wanted. It was a precious commodity. He would go to other towns, like take the little money he had, and travel to another town to pick up the latest rhythm and blues album from America that was his passion. So he was passionate, a very passionate person. And he made you feel no matter who you were, he made you feel important. He didn't take anybody for granted. He would talk to everybody and had a special relationship with everybody that he had, that he communicated with. So he was a genuine person and big-hearted guy and didn't forget you.
How about yourself, Bob?
Well, one of the things Mark mentioned, the early rock and roll, he would always just, take pride in saying, yeah, man, I saw Willie Dixon in 1962, I saw Lightnin' Hopkins the first time he and Brownie McGee came to London, and his roots were deep. His rock and roll roots were very deep. But just as a being, as a human being, man, he cared about you. He cared about your family. He would always ask, how your children are doing, and remember them. He might not see somebody for a couple years, and he'd see them. He'd remember their names, ask about them, ask what they're up to, and their life to him was as important as his life was, and equality, yeah, I think. He was honest. He was brutally honest, man. You asked a cat a question, you were going to get the answer, and maybe it wasn't the answer you wanted, but he was honest.
Ed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with everything these guys have said. The one thing, Joe had a friendship with all our dogs. I mean, it was just incredible. I mean, I have two bird dogs over the course of the snooker game out there, and dogs would kind of wander around, but Joe would come in, and they're up in his lap. And I mean, and he's loving it, you know? I mean, the older dog would come up and smack him on the leg, and he'd get another cashew and give it to her, you know? And then she'd walk around, look at everybody else, and go back to Joe and smack him again because she wanted another dog. And it was just, he was just so broad spectrum in his love and care for just what was around him.
What is snooker? And
I can answer that. Snooker is something that it's a game that these other guys are trained to learn to play, and they're coming along okay. Every once in a while they'll get a ball in. Snooker is a big table. It's a 9x12 table officially, and it's a billiards table. It's got holes in each corner and two in the middle. It's got a series of red balls and then a series of colored balls. And so what you try and do is to knock in a red ball and then a colored ball and a red ball and then a colored ball and you get points for these. You get more points for the colored balls than you do for the red balls. And I, as I say, I'm not sure that these other guys that play snooker even know that because they hardly ever get past the red balls. But it's possible that they got that down because I know they read books on snooker and things. And so we would usually have five or six games a night and on a Wednesday night. And we'd play till somebody won three games. And when they won three games, we'd go home.
How did you get introduced to snooker? Was it Joe who brought the game to you?
Joe brought it here with the most beautiful snooker table that you've ever seen. Legend has it came out of the Queen's house or something, and it definitely could have. So we started playing over there, and then Ed Bliss broke down and got a table, and then Catherine made me get a table.
Yeah.
And then Bob got a table, so there's four of us, and we'd come, we'd start playing, and then we'd have dinner, and we'd all sit around the table and visit and enjoy what was always fantastic food. And then we'd go back, and I'd go back to try and teach them how to play.
A lot of folks felt that it was really the North Fork Dinner Club, and snooker was just a sidelight.
How many years has this club been going for?
It's 18 years at least. I think possibly a little bit longer than that. I've had our table for 16 years. And one thing people have often asked me, like, how much do you bet or anything? And like, we've never, ever, as far as I know, one dime has crossed the table. But the shame and the derision and the embarrassment and the humiliation runs chest deep when you screw up.
What do you think he contributed to music?
He, obviously, his biggest influence was probably Ray Charles. There's some other ones. There's, you know, some English, Lonnie Donegan, some other rockers. But obviously, Ray Charles was a very big influence. And actually, Ray Charles recorded a song that Joe... Usually it was the other way around, where Joe would record other people's songs. But Joe actually made an album where Ray Charles, after hearing one of the tunes on the album, went in the studio and cut a cover of Joe's version down to the last note. So, I mean, he in his day was one of the most unique performers in his style. He had a unique style that was Joe, and it was he pulled it off, and no one else could copy that. A lot of people tried, but nobody else really were able to copy that.
Bob, Joe Cocker was a big contributor here to KVNF, and he had a lot of ties here to the Valley. Can you tell me what his presence and his music meant to this area or means to this area?
We don't have enough time for me to tell you all of that. One of the things that happened when we were looking at property, one day we were driving around, and Joe said, "Hey, man, I want you to know, if there's ever anybody in this valley that needs any help, you just let me know, and I'll take care of it. But I don't want anybody to know." God, you choked up. So Joe says, "If anybody needs any help, you just let me know. But one thing, don't let them know where it came from." And that's the cat he was. He did so much for the students. He did so much for the schools. He did so much for his neighbors. He did so much that we don't even know about. That, like I said earlier, in the tribute, if everyone of his stature performed in their communities like he did in ours, it'd be a different world.
What do you think is his musical impact on the world?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, just that tune, man, A Little Help. It's like our anthem, of our generation. Because we do all get by with a little help from our friends. And there's no other way that we would be here today.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do
I have a little help
for my pain? All I need is my brother.
I have a little help
for my pain. I say I'm gonna get high. Tell no insane no more.
I have a little help from my friend.
Gonna get out of my
friend. I have a little help from my
friend. Yeah, 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 I'm gonna try.
I have a little help from my
friend. Keep on getting out.
Do you need anybody?
Someone to love. And it happens all the time, yeah.
What do you see when you turn out the light?
I can't tell you, but it sure feels like mine. Don't you know I'm gonna make it with my friends? I promised myself I'd get by. Said I'm gonna try it with them.
Do you need
You've been listening to Talkin' Music on KVNF. On behalf of the board, staff, and volunteers at KVNF, we want to express our deep gratitude for all Joe Cocker brought to this world, the legacy of Joe's music, and his great contributions to KVNF and to the North Fork community will never be forgotten. Thank you for listening.